Trendstorm.
Welcome back to Trendstorm. Now let's take a look at the Cold War in the GCC. The Gulf Cooperation Council was rocked by a scandal this week, as Saudi Arabia and its allies swiftly moved to cut all ties with fellow member Qatar over claims that it supports regional terrorism. The allegations are purportedly due to Doha's persistent backing of the Muslim Brotherhood, despite agreeing in late 2014 to radically downscale its support for the organization as part of a détente with Saudi Arabia the last time the two sides butted heads over the issue. The straw that broke the camel's back this time around, so to speak, reportedly came during the Riyadh summit a few weeks ago, when Qatari Emir Al-Thani spoke pragmatically about Iran's regional role and criticized the implied anti-Iranian nature of the Saudi-led military alliance. None of this was made public at the time, but then recently, some of the Qatari leader's comments were reported on by one of his country's national broadcasters, which sparked instantaneous criticism from the Saudis. Doha said that it was the victim of a hacking attack, though Riyadh and its allies didn't believe it. After planning their response for nearly a week, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Bahrain launched what amounts to a de facto embargo on their peninsular neighbor by shutting down all land, sea, and air connection with Qatar. They also took measures to close down the Al Jazeera offices in their countries. Moreover, GCC allies such as Egypt, the Hadi government in Yemen, General Haftar's government in eastern Libya, and a handful of other countries united behind the Saudis in cutting all ties with Qatar too. Qatar expressed dismay that its former coalition allies suddenly turned against it, though Foreign Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Thani said that his country will not launch measures to escalate toward its brotherly nations. He also said that Kuwait proposed mediating between both sides and is actively working to contain the crisis. In any case, the resumption of the Qatari-Saudi Cold War has already spread uncertainty all throughout the Mideast, with analysts scrambling to forecast how this could impact the wars in Syria and Libya, where both sides have proxy fighters. In addition, the unexpected disunity in the so-called Arab NATO is thought to have generated strategic relief for Iran, and given the Islamic Republic valuable breathing space from the American-backed regional pressure that was supposed to be put on it following Trump's visit last month. So, folks, I'm very happy to announce that we're joined by a very, very distinguished guest. That's Mr. Ambassador Arif Kamal. He's the former Pakistani diplomat who dedicated almost 11 years in his 34 years of diplomatic profession to the Middle East arena and was also ambassador to Qatar from 1999 to 2003. Ambassador Kamal, it is an honor to have you on Trendstorm today.
Trendstorm.
All right, Ambassador, how successful do you expect that the U.S. will be in resolving the differences between its Gulf allies, and could any other great powers, such as Turkey, see an even better opportunity to get involved as well?
Well, there are a number of pressure points that carry the potential of influencing the situation and finding a way to some sort of a compromise. But one cannot prematurely single out a particular one factor as against the other. So first of all, we need to keep in view that there is a U.S. presence, 11,000 personnel in the Central Command since 2003. And they continue to be there and continue to operate, and they have come there because of their exit from the Saudi Peninsula. The second thing I think we need to keep in view that there is a lot of U.S. pressure, post-Iraq pressure. And the simplest way of to judge it is from the tweets that President Trump has been displaying, a kind of snub for Qatar. So this again is to put them to a defensive mechanism. These two good things are certainly U.S. related, but then there are others in the region who would like to pacify the situation. First of all, Kuwait is already taking an initiative. Oman is maintaining an equal distance between Iran and Riyadh, but they would also like to these tensions to subside. Of course, Turkey was very well positioned, but Turkey would like to use its muscle by way of a proactive approach and perhaps making its presence felt even in military terms. So I think they're a mixed bag of signals, and of course, there is no possibility that the either of the two sides would be prepared for muscle flexing beyond a limit, going to a sort of war, where war would be a disaster, not for Iran, it would be a disaster for the ones who provide space for a broader action against Iran. And I think the economies of places like Dubai can just collapse, not by being targeted by Iranians, by targeting Iran itself would cause the bubble to explode. So I think this realization exists on both sides, and perhaps there would be some measure of caution from either side.
All right, and what consequences will this crisis have on the so-called Arab NATO and the regional balance of power between Saudi Arabia and Iran?
Well, first of all, the cracks in the Arab NATO, if you like to call it that way, are already visible. Kuwait is engaged in mediation. Oman is taking an equidistant policy. And now Qatar is the one that has not been in line with the decisions that were taken in and around Riyadh summit. And therefore, the cracks are already evident, and its Turkish parliament adopted a bill this morning on expediting the possibility to dispatch troops to a Qatari base, then there is nothing called Arab NATO or Arab NATO plus others in the region. I mean, it's my personal view, but I think that this is already witnessing major cracks. By the mere fact that there are cracks here and there are voices of dissent, it gives Iran its greatest strategic space. And I think this getting greater strategic space is very logical. And I think there is no other option but to talk to them rather than coerce them. Because 34 years, 37 years of the sanctions imposed on Iran didn't work. So how could the Trump-era administration would like to deal with them in an aggressive mode? I think the two sides had to talk to each other and find how to build structures of mutual confidence and sort of peace and stability in the broad region.
Thank you very much for that, Ambassador Kamal. We were honored to have you on the program, and we're very happy that you shared your insight with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now we are joined by another Pakistani guest. That's Dr. Farooq Hasnat. He's professor of political science and formerly the chair of political science at Punjab University.
Trendstorm.
All right, Dr. Hasnat, a similar dispute unfolded in 2014, but was apparently resolved, or so it was thought, by Doha promising not to let the Muslim Brotherhood use its territory for regional operations. So what happened since then? And if the Saudis are to be believed, why did Qatar renege in the deal?
Actually, if you look at the activities of Muslim Brotherhood, you said became the cause of friction between the two Gulf countries. And I think Saudis unjustified in putting pressure on Qatar to ban the Muslim Brotherhood and take other appropriate actions. The reason is that Muslim Brotherhood is not a terrorist organization. It believes in the constitutions of the respective society. It believes in the election system. It believes in the parliaments. They have been taking part in the elections in Egypt, and they won the elections. In Tunisia, they won the election. In Algeria, in 1989, they won the election. So it's a brotherhood is a kind of a political party which has its own ideology. Fine, that's fine. But they believe in the democratic process and they believe in the institution. The problem with the Saudis is that they don't. They do not have any representative institutions. They do not have a multi-party system. It's an authoritarian set of government. And they feel that if the Muslim Brotherhood has its way, then it will set a bad example for the Saudi society, and it will give clues to the Saudi population that they would also demand for free elections or elected parliament.
Okay, this is very interesting. So the next thing I want to ask you is, what do both sides, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia hope to achieve this time around with their latest tensions, and how far will they realistically go in pursuit of their respective objectives?
Saudi Arabia actually initiated this tension, and they took a number of steps which I think were unwarranted. They could have protested. They could have invited the Qataris to have a meeting. Because after all, Qatar is also a member of GCC and also a member of a larger coalition in the area. And they have been cooperating with the Saudis in the past also. But I think that the Saudi new generation of leadership is desperate. They are in a hurry. They have a knee kind of reaction to any development that takes place, and they go to far extent where normal countries do not. For example, they attacked Yemen. They occupied Bahrain during the Arab Spring. Now this is the third country against which they have adopted such hostile attitude. I don't think so. Both the countries have much choices to extend this conflict beyond this. I mean to say, there cannot be real fighting. That I will rule that out. But the tension will remain, and we should not forget that other actors have also moved in. For example, Turkey, which has fairly good friendly relations with Saudi Arabia, and which was present during the Riyadh summit. They have agreed to send 3,000 troops to Qatar, obviously to protect Qatar. And they have also opened up their facilities to export goods and even water and other human items to Qatar. So it has become a more complicated type of war, a diplomatic war between Qatar and Southeast, primarily for the exercise of influence. But I do not think that there will be an armed conflict, because both the countries cannot afford that.
Okay, well, the last thing I want to ask you then today, Dr. Hasnat, is how will this Cold War reverberate across the Syrian, Iraqi, Yemeni, and even Libyan war zones where both sides have proxy fighters?
Exactly. You know, if Saudi Arabia and Qatar accelerate the conflict in these areas, as you mentioned, then who is going to benefit? Actually, Daesh should benefit, which is a common enemy of all the countries, across board, across religion. So Daesh should get more space. They will get more breathing space, in fact, and they would come out more in a more comfortable situation, because if these groups start fighting with each other, and instead of concentrating on Daesh, in fact, their whole concentration at this time should have been to defeat Daesh and to eliminate Daesh in each and every country. It's not only in Libya, it is in other countries as well, more or less, even ideologically speaking. So that should have been the aim. But it's very unfortunate, I would say, that Daesh is a very dangerous terrorist organization which goes across borders, across the countries. So to give them a breathing space through these conflicts, through these tensions between Qatar and Saudi Arabia, it is not a good strategy for the region, and it's not a good strategy for peace in the world.
All right. Well, Dr. Hasnat, thank you very much for coming on a Trendstorm, and thanks for this very comprehensive talk. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Trendstorm.
So, folks, if we are reflecting what the ambassador and the doctor share with us today, we need to come to the conclusion that this really is a Cold War. This is a Cold War for keeps, and it does appear as though Saudi Arabia is bullying its smaller neighbor. But we need to look at this and put it into perspective, because Qatar, for as small as it is almost on equal terms in a strategic sense with Saudi Arabia when it comes to its energy reserves, albeit with LNG. Also, the fact that it has so much soft power. Al Jazeera is a global brand. And we also can't discount the fact that these Qatari-Saudi tensions are part of the larger Mideast-wide Saudi-Iranian tensions because of the Emirates' pragmatic stance towards Tehran. So, folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.